and welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 307. Today we're discussing Agent Carter, season 2, episode 1, Lady in the Lake. I'm Danielle, and I will be your host for today, and I am joined by two lovely ladies that I'm very excited to talk to. We have superfan Karen, and we have newbie Ariana.
Hi.
If you want to get in contact with us, you can do so. Please, please do so. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can, as Natalie says, tumble us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Or you can come join our really nifty new Facebook group. We are the Rewatchables Rewinders. We have a lot of great conversations going on over there. And as those of you who are already in the group may know, late last night I posted a photo of myself crying after watching the season 1 finale with Karen last night, just so you know that I am not exaggerating when I say that there's ugly crying going on with that episode. So for more fun things like that, come join our group. Again, it's Rewatchables Rewinders. Now, this week and every week, we'd like to start off each episode with some fun facts just to get you used to our voices. And I'm going to kick it to Karen to go first this week.
Okay. My fun fact is dumb, but I ate Panda Express for the first time in my life, and it was really good. The reason why I wanted to is because the Try Guys did it, so I wanted to do it. I love the Try Guys so much, and Keith has his Eat the Menu series, and he ate everything at Panda Express and said the best thing on the menu was the mushroom chicken, and of course, because mushrooms are my favorite thing in the world, I had to get it. So Danielle was kind enough to take me to Panda Express yesterday, and it was quite delicious. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, two things. One, if you haven't figured it out, we're together currently.
Oh, yeah.
In person. And two, I still don't understand how you went so long without ever having Panda Express, but that's beyond me.
I don't know either.
But I'm glad that you liked it. I'm glad that it wasn't a wasted trip.
Yeah.
That makes me feel good.
Would eat again.
Good. Oh, good. Ariana, your fun fact for today?
My fun fact, can it just be that I really enjoy Panda Express? And yeah. I know that that's like, that it's basically like the Taco Bell version of Chinese food, but I also kind of like Taco Bell. So, yeah.
I love Taco Bell.
I know you love Taco Bell.
I do not love Taco Bell. It's one of the things that, one of the barriers between Danielle and I. There are not many.
I should say, like, love is a strong word. I don't love Taco Bell. I do enjoy their, like, 80-cent bean burritos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty much the only thing I eat from there.
I love Mexican food. Like, there's a difference between Mexican food and Taco Bell. I know where that line is, and I love them both for different reasons. Also, Karen, you can leave.
This is my apartment.
It's fine.
He tried to kick me out last night, too.
Didn't work. Okay, so my fun fact for the week is that we went out shopping yesterday, and for some reason I've been in the mood to have a trench coat or like just a nice spring jacket, because all I walk around in when it's not blistering hot or when it's not like super snowy is my North Face, which, don't get me wrong, I love my little North Face, like fleece, whatever, but I wanted to be more of an adult. So yesterday we were walking around a Burlington Coat Factory, and I was looking for a jacket, and I find one up on the wall, and I go to grab it and hold it up and turn around to show it to Karen. And when I turn around, she's holding the exact same jacket up to me. From like a couple of aisles over. Same jacket, same color. And I ended up getting it. And so the second half of my fun fact is that it is such a lovely blue that if I paired it with a red hat, I could pass as a modern day Peggy, which, again, unintentional, but this is my life now.
Yeah. It's destiny all around.
And it's going to be my favorite new thing. I'm going to wear it everywhere. And I love it. Absolutely love it. All right. But speaking of Peggy, let's get into this episode, because I have some thoughts about this, and the thoughts that are in our doc currently make me very excited. And so I just want to jump right in. Adiana's recap reads, in this episode, Peggy's headed to Hollywood, where the sun's always shining, but there's still dead girls frozen in lakes. Meanwhile, back in New York, Jack interrogates Dottie poorly. And then alternatively, here's your The Magician's summary. Peggy loses a horse race. Jack throws a carrot.
That is a very accurate representation of what a magician's summary looks like.
I adore the magician's summaries
they're
so good. They make absolutely no sense before you watch the episode. And after the episode, you're like, of course, that was the whole episode.
Yeah.
I appreciate their succinctness.
Yes. They don't give any away, no spoilers or anything.
No.
It's great.
That's awesome. I have no context for it, but I hope to watch that one soon.
My favorite thing to discover recently, minor magician's tangent, is that the episode title for 411 is the 411. And I just thought that was really clever.
Oh, I like that. That's very nice.
That should have been my actual fun fact, that I love the magicians.
It should have been. That's like a perennial fun fact.
Yeah.
It's a bonus.
Actually, before we jump into this particular episode, Adiana, you were not on our finale episode, and I always love hearing your thoughts on shows, but I have been so invested in your investment in this show that I would love to hear any burning thoughts that you had about the finale, if you would like to share. Did it play okay for you? How did you feel about Jack's stuff?
Yeah, it played okay. It's weird because I feel like I don't remember the finale now because I feel like it's been 2 weeks. Because I literally, last time we recorded, as soon as the recording was over, I watched the finale. So okay. I don't really remember it anymore.
Howard getting shot down, almost shot down.
I know. I feel like this is going to be so disappointing for you guys. But, I remember feeling like, oh, that was fine. That was nice. It was fine. I really did love the two episodes before it. Mm-hmm. I think quite a bit more. Not like it was bad. The finale was fine. I just felt like the stakes were different.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, I really like it when there's emotional stakes involved, and it felt more like that when her friends didn't believe her and kind of turned on her. And I like Howard, but I'm not super emotionally invested in him.
Sure.
He's fine. But I get it. I do think that he was gay for Captain America. I think Natalie was right.
I think so too. All right. So when we find the SSR in this episode, we have a pretty great opening. We have a sort of classic bank heist, but with a bit of a twist, where the SSR has actually staked out the bank. They know Dottie's coming. Dottie walks in her Peggy best, basically, but she's not even the most well-dressed person in this scene. It's amazing to me. This whole episode, just to be warned, I'm going to be commenting about how much I love their style.
Their style is really great. Jack Thompson, when I see him, I'm like, you should look ridiculous, but why am I so turned on right now?
Oh, when he does the little hat thing, I turned to yell and I was like, that was hot.
And he's got, everybody does, but I really feel like he started it last season. Like those super short, weird wide ties. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is so weird, but it mm-hmm. works on you.
I mean, that was a post-World War II, or during World War II also, look, because they just had fabric outages. Mm. So, every tie was shorter. I'm not sure why they were fatter, because I think you would want to make it skinnier, but maybe it was just compensating slightly.
I also, did a little bit of research, because I was like, is he wearing a zoot suit? And I feel like it's not quite a zoot suit, but it's
it's close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. And I mean, that's cultural appropriation, but that's fine. He can do it.
It's fine when Jack does it?
Yeah. Is he pulling it off? I feel like not 100%, but the bravado I don't know. It's just like a really flamboyant guy who's not really pulling off his look, but mm-hmm. you really appreciate how he's trying.
He's got that confidence.
Yeah.
White man confidence.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to be talking a lot about Jack in this episode. I'm very disappointed.
I'm very excited to hear you. I've said this a couple times, and I was telling it to Karen last night. Your investment in Jack and like your discussions of him have made me appreciate him so much more this go around, and I'm so happy about it. So please just keep talking about Jack. I'm into it and here for it. Yes. But before we talk about him some more, I do want to touch on Dottie, because I know in our season finale, like wrap up episode last week, the newbies there, Brittany and Nassim, they were okay with Dottie and kind of okay with that she got away, but they weren't necessarily clamoring to see her again. How did you feel, Ariana, when she showed back up on screen, both just in general and because of the fact that she showed up sort of as Peggy?
I'm so confused. And I know this is like a talking point later, but I just don't understand why she's so obsessed with her. Like,
yeah.
Like, I get her like being like, ooh, Peggy's interesting. But like, this is like serial killer level obsession. Like, and it started last season with her like dressing like her and being like, I'm Peggy. And it's really gone far in this episode. It's so weird. And I don't understand it, because was she aware of Peggy? I mean, she must have been aware of Peggy before she went to go live there and before she was given to her as an assignment. Like,
yeah.
I think she admires
it's so bizarre.
A lot. And I think part of it is Dottie is obviously an excellent spy and an excellent fighter and all of that, but I also feel like she's being controlled. She's not really her own woman, whereas Peggy is, and she does everything she can to be independent and prove her worth to people. And, well, I know my value.
So I was going to say wrong word.
Yeah,
but
that's
sure.
Not the way that I want to put it, but she's just who she is. Whereas I don't feel like Dottie has very much control over her own life. She gets her assignments, and that's who she becomes until her next assignment. So I think it is an obsession with Peggy and wanting to be like her. And of course, Dottie is a little cuckoo bananas, as Kristen would say.
Just a little bit. I think it also harkens back to in the season finale when Peggy and Dottie face off in the room with the radio. Dottie has a short speech there that's like, I always wanted to be like you. I wanted to look like you. I wanted to sound like you. Just like general you, like someone, again, who has their own personality, who's like a particular type of girl. And I think seeing how Peggy marries that aesthetic, perhaps, as well as her strength, is something that Dottie really wants. And like, Howard doesn't remember Dottie because Dottie has no personality, even when she's being someone else, even when she's undercover. And that kind of wounds her as well. So I think she's trying on a personality that she knows, or like some sort of aesthetic that she knows other people kind of admire and respect, and just wanting that for herself because she doesn't want to feel invisible, perhaps. But it does get very stalker level.
And I mean, Peggy beat Dottie, and like, that's probably not an easy thing for Dottie to admit. And as we find out, the only person Dottie's really afraid of is Peggy.
So that could be why she walks in on like in the bank with a off-brand blue suit. And her hair is not as great, but
it's not
like it stays that way because Peggy like backhands her with a bag of coins.
Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
It's definitely one of my favorite openers. I think it's really well done because they start sort of with slightly similar shots that they do from the first episode's opener with Dottie walking through the crowd in the blue mm-hmm. suit. And you're not
like
sure.
I feel like you immediately know it's not.
You know it's not Peggy,
yeah.
I think, just from the way she carries herself.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. And you can kind of tell that Jack is in the room when he puts his hands up mm-hmm. and they're like focusing on the side yeah. of his head and his fingers. And you're like, oh, what's up? And then Jack jumps on a table. I thought that was really extra of him. I didn't notice it my first go around, but this one I was like, why? He just effortlessly jumps on a table to tell everybody to like chill.
And that's how you command a room.
I guess so. So Peggy and Dottie start off the season premiere with a pretty great fight. And they take Dottie into custody. I think it's because like Dottie is working with, they've been tracking her down for one, but also she's been working with like a group of people and she was trying to rob a specific safe or a specific box in the bank vault that had a weird looking tie pin in it.
And let's also note that it took them at least 6 months to find her again.
Yes. Yeah. And that's assuming that Sousa left the SSR the next
immediately.
Day yeah. to start the LA office. So good for Dottie. That's great. I do want to talk about the fact that there are now two SSR offices. We have Chief Thompson, which I don't think it comes as a surprise that he assumes that role. And then we have Chief Sousa, who's a chief, like he and Jack are again on the same level, but he moved all the way to LA. What did we make of this? Do we like seeing them in charge?
I'm of two minds for each of them because I think Jack is a very competent agent. I think both of them are, not to say anything against Sousa. I think Jack is a very competent agent, and I feel like if he could just put his ego to the side once in a while, then he could be even more effective. But he doesn't always make the right call, which is very frustrating because I want to like him. But every once in a while, he does something that just infuriates me. And then Sousa, on the other hand, I don't know. I feel like the first time I watched this, I was very love struck for Sousa. Like I shipped him Peggy super hard and I thought he was like really cute and kind of an underdog character like her. And I was rooting for that. And this time I feel like he's kind of whiny and I still like him. And I'm really glad he has his own agency. That is pretty cool and a huge step up from season one. But I think I'm like a little more cautious this time around in like dealing with him because he also says and does things and acts certain ways that frustrates me. I don't know, the boys on the show.
Are you talking about Daniel Sousa?
I am.
Why? I'm so sorry. okay, I'm struggling with a lot of things right now because I don't want to be an alarmist and like have a person come and then be like, oh.
But also, I don't want you to die.
But yes, also, that's the thing though, but they're both like, on one hand, I could die, but on the other hand, I could look stupid. So
I completely understand why those two things are on the same level and with a lot of anxiety. But I'm going to tell you, logically, it's worse to die.
No, I sent the email and I opened Windows. So hopefully
opening Windows is smart. That's
that helps. Yeah. I'm really sad I missed you talking smack about Sousa, though.
I mean, I talked smack about Jack, too.
I'm sad I missed both of these things.
Okay, I'll recap super okay. briefly.
Okay,
and then you can jump in.
Yeah, they both do things that infuriate me. I think Jack has a big ego, but he doesn't always make the right call, but he's a very competent agent. So I like seeing him in charge, but he's kind of dumb sometimes. And then Sousa, the first time around, I was very love struck with him. Like I shipped him and Peggy super hard. He was also an underdog. I was rooting for him. This time around, I feel like he's very whiny and also does things and says things that makes me angry.
And we're talking about how they are both on equal playing field. They're both chiefs mm-hmm. in different branches of the SSR now.
This is fascinating because I'm not sure if we want to get into this now.
We can.
I was so angry with Jack this entire episode, and that's probably because I love him so much. And for the first time, I was like, Suze is not so bad.
I'm so fascinated by this.
But I also didn't care about Sousa at all. So
yeah, he was like a wet, he was a wet blanket to you for a while.
Yes. Yes. But I don't know. I don't want to compliment him, but this is fascinating. Why are you mad at him right now, Karen? What did he do in this episode that frustrated you besides not returning any of Peggy's calls?
Yeah. I think he's got this sort, like, he's wounded from her, and she didn't even shoot him down. Like, that was the thing. She was just dealing with a lot of emotional stuff at the end of the season one finale, and she needed to take time for herself, but she wasn't not interested in him. And he kind of took that to heart and literally moved across the country to get away from this person who actually does care about him. So that's very frustrating that he's like taking it the wrong way and taking it very personally. But he's also not exactly that, and he's not expressing himself. He's not communicating with her. Like, he needs to, they need to talk about it. But I think both of them are kind of like, very proper and also bad at talking about feelings, because Peggy is too. And I think that neither one of them really want to be vulnerable like that, because it is very difficult. But I mean, again, I still really like Sousa, and I think that he's a good guy ultimately, but he's just a little whiny sometimes. And that's, I think that bothers me more this time around than it did before.
That's fascinating. I will say that last night I sat down and like wrote out an essay for myself on why Sousa and Peggy were not a good match long term. So maybe I'll share those thoughts later. But
mail that to us.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I was just thinking a lot about it on my drive home.
Danielle is glowing right now. She is so happy.
I mean, I'm not the biggest, like, I also enjoyed the Sousa Peggy pairing. I'm not like super into it, like number one ship ever, but I am fascinated.
Well, first let me start with why I was frustrated with Jack in this episode.
Yes.
And I was mostly frustrated with him, not even quite because of his ego. Those are things that I feel like I could live with in terms of this character, because he's clearly on like a character arc trajectory that he has to go through that he's not quite done with yet. So like all the ego stuff, like him sending Peggy to LA, that I could live with if he wasn't so bad at his job. Yes. That is what is so frustrating to me, because that's last true. Season he was a jerk, but he always got it done. And yes. That was, and so like, as long as you're competent, I will deal with your messiness as a character. But he sent Peggy away, and then he was also bad at his job. Mm-hmm. And so, and I just feel like he keeps making, like, poorer and poorer decisions. And that is really frustrating for me, that he is devolving after we saw him evolve last season.
That was going to be my question for you, is like, why exactly do you think he did send Peggy away? Because he's seen her become a very good agent. Or I mean,
that's exactly why he sent her away, in my opinion, because he's like jealous. He's like, oh, look, she's the new hotshot, you know? I mean, we saw at the beginning that those two guys were like, oh, wow, this is, you know, what did they say? two boxers.
Yeah, it was basically like the two boxers, like, showdown.
I was going to say, like, Manny and that other guy, but that's not true because that's 2000.
Manny, was it Manny and John Jones?
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, because I find both Jack and Sousa to have really weird relationships with Peggy, because mm-hmm. I do see Jack getting frustrated and jealous for all of the reasons and like in all of the scenes you guys have mentioned. But there are also those moments where the admiration is coming through, or like the congeniality, I think is the wrong word, but like you could tell that they're friends sort of. And that kind of shines through a couple scenes, or like, Sousa is acting super awkward towards Peggy and, like, is not wanting to communicate her, bristles at her, doesn't seem to want her to be there. But then he will tell that PI one thing and then turn around and give Peggy all of the clearance that she wants and needs to just go and do whatever she wants and needs to do. So it seems like a lot of back and forth, or like they just can't decide how they feel about having her around.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely like very weird relationship that they both have with her. Like, I guess the most comparable thing that people could relate to, I feel like, in terms of Jack with Peggy, is that I do think that he's like proud of her and admires her when he does work. Like you would for like a, like your sibling. Like, you know, like I love it when my siblings do something really cool. Mm-hmm. But then also there's like a tinge of jealousy because what if my parents love them more now? You know? So I feel like it's similar to that. He's like, I mean, my favorite scene is the bank heist. And part of it is like that I feel like you can feel the camaraderie between him and Peggy and like, we did this together. Yeah. But then that goes away as soon as everyone is like, look at how cool Peggy is.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels like, but I'm not getting enough credit now.
Which I think about me. Funny. And not that jealousy is necessarily logical, because it usually isn't. But he's still the chief. He's still the one in charge calling the shots. Peggy could be as awesome as she wants. She's not going to be chief.
Yeah. That'll never happen for her.
Yeah. But again,
I'm not even 100% convinced that he realizes, that either one of them realizes what they're doing, that they're reacting out of jealousy. Mm-hmm. That like when Sousa makes the call and he looks over, like in his fully conscious brain, he might be like, oh, she's really good. I'll send her. And also it'll be funny because I know he has a crush on her because he's like kind of teasing him beforehand. And I can get this done. I'll just get it done. Whereas subconsciously, he's definitely like, oh, I'll get her out and then I'll get the glory.
Yeah, like eliminate the competition without being
angry. But he might not want, because I do think he likes Peggy and considers her like a friend. So he might not want to think that he's doing this for himself and hurting her.
Mm-hmm.
So he might be lying to himself too. Or he might not. He might be fully aware and just be being a jerk.
I mean, either or. We don't have a good sense about it yet, but I'm sure we will as the season progresses, and I want to keep talking about that. But I also want to mention, Ariana, is the fact that they moved the entire season of the entire production to LA the thing that you knew about the show coming into it?
Yes, that is okay. What I knew about the show. Wait, I didn't know that. Did they used to shoot in New York?
I'm sorry, the production, I think, still shot in L.A. I meant the on-screen.
Yes, setting. That is what I knew, that supposedly it was going to be like Hollywood in the 40s, which sounds very like fun and glam. But now I feel like it's probably not going to be Hollywood in the 40s. It might just be like some shots of Howard trying to make movies. Because it looks like this science thing is going to be...
Yeah, thing. Not as glam.
Yeah, I just wanted to see a bunch of like starlets being crazy and like, yeah, but whatever.
Yeah, like the stereotypical, like the flash bulbs everywhere.
And, yeah.
Yep, the swanky parties and the flashy dresses and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think, and you noted it in your doc as well, the way that they shoot is very different from the way that they shot in New York. New York felt slightly sepia-toned and kind of gritty, whereas the way that they're shooting in LA, the lighting choices and just how they frame everything is very different. So even though they were shooting in California, technically, for both seasons, you can feel that they're two distinct areas.
Because New York is a drab, dark, lonely place.
I don't think that that's the choice they were making, though. I feel like they were trying, like New York, they were making it look like, or trying at least to make it look more noir, like 40s noir.
Sure.
Which I think is a really cool choice. And it looks beautiful. Like the first season looks so beautiful. And the shots that we see still in New York are beautiful. But I also like the lighting choice they made for LA. Like it looks like clearly they did something to make it look sunnier. Sure. Like it looks a little bit more golden, which has got kind of like that. So it feels very 40s Hollywood, even if they're not actually with the crazy starlets.
I mean, you never know. Never know what'll happen. But I do think it's interesting that they chose LA. And so the first case in LA is there is a dead girl in the lake. And the twist is that she's in a frozen block of ice. And we come to find out later, not only is she in the ice, like she herself is frozen through and through, which is kind of creepy. And they also think it might be the work of a serial killer, or the PI keeps pushing that it's going to be the work of a serial killer.
And she glows in the dark. Also creepy.
That too. Yep. Can't forget that. I think it's interesting the direction in which they go this season. And like, I don't know. I don't necessarily like, I like how they set it up. Like this is an actual case. This feels very much like a case that someone would have rather than going after someone like Howard Stark. But that PI gets on my nerves so bad. I always forget he exists. And then when he pops up, I'm like, please go away. Also, I think I have face blindness to him. So whenever he would pop up, it would take me a minute to remember who he was.
The actor, but he is very average. So I understand.
Wait, are you talking about the cop?
Yes. Sorry, yes. I keep calling him PI. I think he is just a cop.
Yeah, I think he is just a cop. Okay, yes. No, you're right. He does look very bland. No offense to him. He has like a nice, normal face.
Mm-hmm. Until it starts becoming icy.
Yeah.
You know.
Happens.
You know, that's fine. So yes, so Jack, after a little bit of teasing from Sousa, sends Peggy out to help investigate this case. Side note, it's kind of interesting that Sousa's very first case, or like big case, kind of comes 6 months after he's been there. And also like he needs help right away. But good on him for asking for help. But Peggy flies out, and who picks her up from the airport but everyone's favorite butler, Jarvis. And I mean, this is my favorite scene, and we'll mention it later as well. But I love when Jarvis picks Peggy up from the airport, because at this point, like they know each other, they've been through some stuff. And now they can just banter back and forth and kind of
so good.
Be with each other.
Their banter. I was talking about this last night. They both have pretty dry humor, but together they are so funny. Like it works so well. And I don't know what it is, but it's that chemistry that you can't like cultivate. Like it's gotta be there to begin with. And yeah, their banter in particular is just, they're both very British and very like proper, and the way that they talk and the cadence of their voices and everything, all of it just combines to make this hilarious duo. And it's just this buddy cop kind of thing. And I love watching them on screen together.
I love so many things about this. First, that he picked her up from the airport, because that means they've reached ultimate friend level, because you do not do that in LA. Unless you really, really, really care.
Point taken.
And the other thing is, you're right, their chemistry is so great. When they were bantering, I just kept imagining those dubstep videos and how freaking cute the actors are together.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yes. And the challenge, that Dub Smash challenge, was going on right before this season and then during the season. So once we reach the end, I'll have more videos to share. They're so great. And you can tell that they're friends outside, that everyone's friends outside. It shines through.
I like that one where they're just hugging and like talking to the camera, but they're just like hugging each other. And you could tell that, yeah, they're just friends. And it's so wonderful.
The final thing that I really loved about their relationship in this episode is that I feel like you finally understood why they make such great friends and also would never have any romantic interest in each other whatsoever. Because they're basically the same person. Like they're kind of the same person. And they're both so like rigid and proper and British, I guess. Like clearly Jarvis, and I think honestly Peggy too, is like attracted to a more flamboyant personality.
Mm-hmm. It's fair. Someone to kind of balance them out a little bit.
Yeah. They really get each other at their core.
And it's so important that they don't have romantic feelings for each other. I think that you could this show could have very easily kind of devolved into, oh, everybody's so interested in Peggy and like, which boy is she going to choose? And you kind of, I don't know. I know people do like Peggy and Jack a lot, but she very clearly right now is interested in Sousa. And it's with Jarvis, it's just not there. And I love that they're friends and I love that they trust each other. And then it's just not, it just doesn't exist. I think it does for some people, don't get me wrong, but I've never felt that way. And I think the show is stronger for it.
And I think it also makes it a little bit easier to swallow the fact that, like, of course they're going to move Jarvis to give Jarvis a reason to be in Hollywood, to be in this season. Mm-hmm. I think if he was another romantic love interest and they found a reason to put him out there, it would be like, ugh, of course they would do that. But here, Howard has gone Hollywood. Like, Howard is in the talkies, which makes sense. It makes sense that he's trying to be a producer and all that kind of stuff. So it feels more natural that he's out there for that and also will be able to help his friend rather than he's out there for Howard, but really we put him there because he loves Peggy and Peggy's going to be there. At least I feel that difference.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he picks her up from the airport and she's wearing one of my favorite outfits of hers. A lot of her outfits in this episode, by the way, are like some of my favorites. But picks her up at the airport. He's got a flamingo in tow. So everyone, I hope you enjoyed meeting Bernard Stark.
Oh, yes.
Yes, Bernard is great. He is part of the reason why a lot of people in the Agent Carter community love flamingos and flamingo things. Because why wouldn't Howard have a flamingo in his menagerie?
It makes total sense. Like, you don't even question it.
And a flamingo named Bernard.
Yeah.
That Howard has a menagerie. I really feel like that would be the least interesting animal that he would have.
Right? Or like one of the most dangerous ones. And yet Jarvis can't corral this flamingo. Or like has trouble with the flamingo. It's really great. So yeah, so we see that Jarvis is in LA, and he's not the only one. The telephone lady, Rose, she's back as well, and she's kind of heading up the LA office as sort of secretary, main office, like bodyguard, kind of. Was anybody excited to have her back? Is she someone that kind of stood out in the first season that you wanted to know more about, or is it more like a pleasant surprise?
I was really excited to, I mean, I had a feeling she would be back because Natalie was like, well, just wait till next season.
Oh, yes. Yes, Natalie did do that.
But I'm really excited to see her back. She was funny and she definitely, I like that she has like her own strong personality to make her stand out. And I feel like she's a fun person to have as a regular. I don't know if she'll be a regular, but I hope we see more of her.
Yeah, she's fun and she's also pretty fierce. The way she shoots down those two dancers or just like talks over them as if they're not there. It's kind of rude, but also like she's just not fazed by anything.
I love how she was like, we're not listed anywhere. Our sign is barely legible, but people just won't stop showing up.
I love seeing her. And then we also see back in New York, we see a little bit of the lead scientist from last season as well. And he's kind of complaining about how he could have gone, where could he have worked? He could have worked somewhere like more prestigious, but he chose the SSR and they're basically treating him like shit and just calling him out for it. So
he was going to work for that company that they end up investigating.
Oh, right? He was going to work for Isodyne?
I think that was the one. I just call him the I don't know man because he never knows anything.
The scientist that just doesn't know. But yeah, I like seeing these background characters that we have seen previously kind of get more of a role this season because they don't really shoehorn in too many new characters. We'll get to the ones that they do, or introduce new characters. But I like that they give some stuff to old ones too. But moving into the sort of new characters, we meet a physicist while Peggy and Sousa are investigating Isodyne energies. The physicist, whose name is Jason Wilkes, we meet him while he's trying to recreate the taste of wine or something, or make wine in a lab, which, of course, why not? And he and Peggy kind of immediately hit it off he's not even worried why she's there or who she is. He only just hands her a drink, which is interesting. Ariana, how did you feel about his introduction? Is he someone that you are interested in, whether or not he ends up being good or bad, or did he not stand out for you?
He's fine. He's fine. He had a very weird introduction. Like, I definitely did not trust him from the beginning. And I don't know why in the world Peggy would drink something that a guy in an evil corporation was feeding her that she just met like 5 seconds ago. So I feel like that was real dumb on her part. And also, like, it was just weird on his part to see a strange lady and be like, come in here. So that was weird. And then we saw at the end that he's may or may not be evil. So that's its own thing. But like, in terms of, I don't know, there was something very weird to me about how it felt in this episode, like they were trying to be so post-racial about him being a black scientist.
Mm-hmm.
But that just felt so odd because in universe, they've been very clear that like women are treated poorly, like they were in the 40s and still are today. But so then to be like, women are treated poorly, but we're also post-racial, just felt really weird. So I thought it was bizarre that no mention was made of him being a black scientist.
Well, the cop guy did make a stab at him and call him the janitor. And Peggy was like, he's a physicist. Not that that is like anything in comparison what Peggy had to go through in like her first episode.
Right. But also that's just one.
Yeah.
I think what you're pointing out is something that was like a flaw of the show that a lot of people pointed out in the first season. The fact that the first season is very white, like there's no diversity in the first season. And so I think they were trying to both.
This definitely felt like overcompensating while also not knowing what you're doing.
They're not only introducing diversity, but like they're introducing
addressing it. They're like scared to
not an idiot or not a, someone of a lower title. They wanted to give him a higher title. And so it doesn't necessarily jive as well as maybe they wanted it to.
Yeah, no, and I totally get that. Similarly to how Peggy has a higher title that she maybe may not have been able to have.
Sure.
Or had in a special circumstance. He's clearly in a special circumstance. I just wish that would have been addressed in some way. Like mm-hmm. the way that Peggy's was in the first episode.
Yeah, because they're great with that discussion of gender in that first episode in particular, but throughout the first season. And here, yeah, I agree. He's just kind of thrown in here. And it's hard to figure out how everyone else feels about him.
This is related, but kind of goes back to the beginning of the episode. I always find it kind of weird how everybody kind of, I mean, not everybody loves Peggy in the beginning of this episode, but she's clearly of a much higher standing in everybody's eyes. And I know that it's been 6 months, but after coming off of, you know, season one, it feels very jarring for people, for a lot of the guys in the office to be like admiring her and stuff. Does that bother you guys at all? Or is it just like, this makes sense after everything she'd been through in season one?
I mean, I think that slow clap at the end of the first season changed everything.
Yeah. The slow clap.
The slow clap.
It makes sense to me in that I feel like for them, like their opinion of women overall probably has not changed. Mm. But I think that Peggy for them can very much be like this special snowflake, like this
one of the guys,
even more so like a mascot, like that one special one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like how, like even right now in our administration, like they're parading Candace Owens around as like, look, she's the one good one. And so I like, it's bizarre. I feel like misogynistic people can still be like, oh, but she's okay, she's special.
Or like, look at the good thing we're doing. We're helping this one person, or like we're holding this one person, this one woman to a high esteem. Like, we're great people.
Almost. But that's because she's not like other girls.
Yes, exactly. She's not like other girls. I will say that the two SSR agents in the other half of the interrogation room, that was a little bit over the top, I think. Was that where you were kind of pointing
to?
Yeah,
sort of. And it just, it feels very jarring mm-hmm. after an entire season of everybody just completely dismissing her. And, like, I get it. I understand the point that they're making. But, yeah, I think that maybe they just went a little bit too far with that. It just felt very awkward.
Well, at the same time, I don't think we're going to see a ton of that. I think we're going to actually get a balance of it now that she's in LA, mm-hmm. Because you have that cop who just does not respect her at all, which, I mean, he doesn't know her, so of course he wouldn't respect her. So it's something to follow for sure. But there are quite a few women in this season that are worthy of our respect, worthy of the men's respect. I mean, all women are, but I was really excited when we were first watching this episode way back when, and Jarvis is like, let's go home. Anna has some outfits for you for this mission you have tomorrow. I kind of knew that she was coming at that point when I first saw it, but this could have also very much gone the way of the Big Bang Theory, where you just have this voice in the background yeah. constantly yelling at Jarvis. And that's kind of how the first season made it feel almost. But in this episode, we're pretty quickly introduced to Anna Jarvis, and she is wonderful. At least I think she is wonderful.
She is wonderful.
She's very much not like Jarvis, and she likes to make Jarvis uncomfortable in front of Peggy, which I very much enjoyed. Was Anna Jarvis someone that you were interested in meeting? And like, how did her introduction go for you?
Yeah, I was really interested in meeting her. And also, she was nothing like what I expected. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I was expecting, but probably a female Jarvis, which I guess is just a Peggy. So so for her to be, she really reminds me much more of Howard. She is just, at least in that one scene, she's mm-hmm. kind of like very open and welcoming of Peggy, and also a little bit flamboyant and just doing things to get a rise out of people. Like, because yes, she wanted to embarrass Jarvis, but I think she also kind of wanted to embarrass Peggy a little bit. Yeah. Like, I think she kind of gets off on it. So yeah, she seems fun.
She's so fun. And she has a great sense of style.
Yes.
As we could tell from that racetrack dress that happens later.
The red one?
The red one, yeah.
It's so great. And also I was like, Peggy, I really feel like that's not workplace appropriate. But it's great.
Who's undercover?
Yeah. Yep, with another accent, mind you.
Yes, I love her accents.
Her American accent came back when she was at the racetrack, because apparently all Americans talk about things going to hell in a handbasket. It's just how we speak, don't you know? So Anna helped with this mission. I love that the Jarvis couple gets kind of roped in to Peggy's missions again. I think they're going to be a fun team for everybody to sort of watch moving forward.
And I have to point out that there's just no weird vibes between the two women. Like, how important is it that Anna isn't jealous of Peggy and her working relationship with Jarvis, that there isn't any of this, like,
she doesn't feel threatened.
Yeah, there's no threat there. And, like, because Peggy is 100% uninterested, like, you know, obviously Jarvis is not even an option. And it's refreshing that not only is there no jealousy, but there's an immediate camaraderie between the two of them. And I love it so much. I think that was so important for the show to do.
That's so great. But then we meet another couple who I think the woman is a little bit threatened by Peggy. So when Peggy and Jarvis go undercover to the racetrack, they're talking to this actress. Her name is Whitney Frost. She is in this universe. She's a pretty well-known actress, apparently to everyone except for Peggy. And her husband, whose name I cannot remember. I'm always terrible with his name, but I believe he's a senator, or he's some sort of congressman or businessman. Or no, I'm sorry. He owns Aes Sedai Energy. Mm-hmm. He's not a congressman. He owns Aes Sedai Energy. That's why we're here.
But he's running, isn't he?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to run for office, but he's not there yet. So Peggy and Jarvis have the sort of divide and conquer mentality. So Jarvis uses Howard's studio as an excuse to talk to Whitney Frost and try to rope her into a movie that's not happening, while Peggy takes on the Aes Sedain Energy's millionaire, the owner, to try to get more information about the woman. Because before this, we see, like, not only is the woman dead, but she also froze the coroner as well. And they find out that she was that guy's mistress. And I think this interrogation tactic is interesting. Would it have worked without Jarvis, do we think? Like, would this be something Peggy would be able to do by herself? And, like, does Sousa just sign off on Jarvis doing SSR work while not
That's what I was wondering. I was like, isn't this an official mission? Like, why is Jarvis there?
Peggy's used to breaking the rules and bringing Jarvis along anyway, so.
He's useful.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, because I don't think she could have done this on her own. I think if Whitney Frost had been standing there and she tried to interrogate the two of them together, like, as well, we can see, you know, who's driving the boat in this relationship, and Whitney Frost would have seen through her in 2 seconds flat.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting interrogation scene. Also, like, Peggy doesn't keep up her pretense very long.
No.
Like, she drops it pretty quickly, and for reasons that I still don't understand. It's just like, okay, I'm tired of this. Just tell me what I want to know, basically.
Well, I think she was trying to put him at ease, and as soon as he was very comfortable and kind of thought that this was one thing, she wanted to blindside him. And I think, like, at that point, there was no point in keeping up with, like, the accent and all of that kind of stuff. And I think she probably wanted to scare him a little, too. Like, oh, I'm an SSR agent. You're in trouble. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah. But she doesn't get too much information out of him, I don't think. At least that I can recall here. But, hey, at least we got a nice scene with her in her very famous hat and dress.
I want to know what this is about.
The quote, Mr. Jarvis, our whore's lost?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Because at the end, she says, because they're leaving because they went and they were supposedly betting on horses. And she says, Mr. Jarvis, our horse lost, as a way to say, like, we're leaving now. But she says it so fast, I genuinely thought she said, Mr. Jarvis, our horse lost.
Oh, no.
And wow. And I was like, Peggy, that's really rude. Like, what?
Oh, no. Can that be?
As in, like, I thought as, like, she meant, like, she was referring to the girl as his whore.
Ouch.
Oh, yeah. No.
And it's like, this is really not cool.
Gosh.
But no, I just heard it wrong.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, gosh, Peggy. I would be very surprised if she said something like that.
Yeah.
So I can imagine that you were a little stunned at that.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah, just a little bit. So we see Peggy not necessarily fail at her interrogation, but she doesn't get a lot out of him. And then back in New York, we see Jack, like, really
epically fail
at his interrogation.
Oh, my God.
Like, he tries the carrot and stick routine by himself and, like, trying to put heart into it, which Dottie doesn't give a fuck.
No.
Care.
I was so...
Why did he think that that would work?
I don't know, but he's embarrassing me because last season I just kept talking about how everything else dumb he did, at least he was, like, good at interrogating and good at analyzing people to figure out what would actually make them talk. Like, for some people it is going with heart, like Peggy, and for some people it's, you know, doing something else, like with Jarvis. So yeah, I'm just so disappointed in him that he cannot read her at all. And I get that that's, like, the point, that she's supposed to be, she's been trained from a young age to do this, to be good. But I feel like this was just such an obvious misstep. Like, clearly, yeah, she's not going to care, you idiot. Like, any, I could have told you that.
And he clearly still underestimates her. And again, like, he still has an ego. So, you know, he saw Peggy take off the handcuffs. He could take off the handcuffs. And then, I mean, he is embarrassing himself and unfortunately by extension you, Ariana. But when Dottie flips over the table on him, I was kind of jazzed for that. Like, I was maybe cheering for her a little bit because I think he needed to be put in his place. I think he needed to be reminded that you can't mess with her. She's not afraid of you. She's only afraid of one person, and that's Peggy.
Because Peggy doesn't underestimate her.
Right. And Peggy gets... See, that's the thing. They both know what Dottie is capable of, but Peggy understands what it's like to be a woman who is underestimated and who isn't seen by men, and how powerful of a tool that is. And because she can see through that, it doesn't affect her. It doesn't work on her at all. And I love that so much. And Jack is still falling into that trap of not seeing her really for who she actually is. And he had a lesson to learn.
Well, she taught him a lesson kind of twofold, because not only did he fail that interrogation, he goes back to try again. Was it in the same one? Well, anyway, it took four agents to take her down.
Yeah.
And to like get her under control, even when she wasn't fighting. And
I do want to say, though, that I feel like I don't think he took off her handcuffs because he underestimates her. I do think that he thinks that she's very dangerous. And we've seen that from last season when he told Sousa she's very dangerous.
Posturing?
I think it was total posturing. And I think that's why she could do, like with Peggy, I think it was real. She walked in there and she was like, I'm not afraid of you because I understand you. And I think that Dottie is smart enough to understand that. But with his, I think it was total and complete posturing. I also think it was dumb to go in with the literal exact same method that Peggy was using. He was just being a copycat.
Yeah.
And so part of him being a copycat is that Dottie was like, oh, so you're just a not as good version of Peggy.
Basically. Yeah.
She knew the beats of it, or like, it just... You can see through very easily when someone, yeah, is trying to copy. Well, his posturing doesn't help him either with Dottie or with the FBI, because the FBI comes in and takes Dottie. They break up his interrogation. And I don't remember the actor's name, but I know him as Red Foreman from That 70s Show. Comes in and tells Jack basically like, you're doing fine, kid. We're taking it from here. This is a really sensitive case involving like powerful people, and they're grateful to you. Just let this go. So we see Jack in yet another moment of sort of vulnerability. And later we see him join Fred Foreman at the bar, where he kind of lays out like, hey, if you cooperate with the FBI, the SSR is a sinking ship. Like, we can help you, and the people that you're helping by turning over this case can help you get to where you want to be. Where do you want to be? Do we think Jack is being swayed by this? Do we think that he's trying to figure out what's going on? Or is it a little bit of both?
My impression was that he was being swayed.
Okay.
But that's also the impression I got from him just being dumb this whole episode.
I mean, he did get his pride hurt in this episode quite a bit. And I do like to point out that like at the season one finale, he got knocked out twice and was not involved in any of what was going on in that finale. So he has not been on his game. So perhaps maybe the FBI and these people being interested in him, soothing his ego.
I think also he has a real fear of being irrelevant. And that, I mean, I think that's a fear that a lot of people can relate to. I mean, that's like how all old people feel, right? Like that eventually I won't matter anymore because
yep.
I won't be useful in some way. Mm-hmm. And that was really cutting to the core of this, and where he was like, this thing that you've climbed to the top of this thing, but it's going away. So you should start looking to start all over.
And he got there because of his military service, which mm-hmm. is not all that helpful because some of it's fabricated
mm-hmm.
or the important parts are fabricated.
I was also so mad to find out that like his daddy got him his job. I mean, that's how it always goes, but
of course. Of course. And I mean, I don't know if I have to even ask this, but the FBI agent, we don't like him, right?
I love him. What are you talking about? Gosh. He's great. clearly the hero of this story.
I just keep waiting for him to threaten someone that he's going to stick his foot up their ass.
Like, I mean, although it's probably, what he's saying is probably not false, right? Like the SSR doesn't exist in the MCU anymore, correct?
Correct. Like
it did go away and yep. was kind of ish replaced by S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess what he's saying is not false. Doesn't Peggy start S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yep, Peggy and Howard do.
That's nice.
They like tag team it.
Good for them.
Yeah, so I mean, and us knowing that, like we do know that what the FBI say, the agent is saying is actually happening. That's a great point. I think that adds a little bit of immediacy to what's going on. I think it'll be something interesting to watch. I don't know if, I like kind of what's going on with two separate locations at this point, but I'm also a little disappointed that everyone's kind of separated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't
think that disappointed anybody else.
Especially because Jack and Sousa have an interesting relationship where I think they truly do respect one another, but there's this like sibling rivalry between them a little bit. And both of them kind of like poking the other one, but ultimately like they're good guys doing the same job and like trying to get it done. And that, especially because we watched 3 episodes last night because I was behind, their friendship in the last 2 episodes where they really start to trust each other, I think is so interesting and something that the whole season had been building toward. And so, yeah, now that they're separated, you only get that over the phone, which is not quite the same thing, but they get to rib each other a little bit, which I like.
But it was, their phone call in this episode was very cute before yes. Jack went and ruined everything, but it was very cute. Like they were bickering like brothers, but also like congratulating each other. And there was this new level of respect in that they were both at the same position and the same level now. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure it would be like if I was the leader of something in New York, I would want the leader of the person in LA to be my friend and someone I respected. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. But yeah, it is really annoying that now Jack is literally the only main character in New York.
It's sad, but
it seems like a waste.
Seems like a waste, but hashtag no comment on if it's saying that way. Because why not just throw that in there? All right, let's wrap up this episode. So no luck at the track for figuring out what was going on. It wasn't until after everybody's back at the SSR, they bring in the physicist to take a look at the woman because he's their only real chance at trying to figure it out. And while doing so, they figure out, shocker, that the cop is a sort of bad guy and that he was kind of setting them up all along in order to be able to help himself. Slightly convoluted, and I always forget how that resolves, but so he steals the physicist in hopes that the physicist will help him, and they kind of drive off, but then he freezes his car, so they have to walk, and it's a whole big thing. And so basically, this guy is on the run. Peggy is smart enough to be like, no, don't shoot, because she knows that he's going to be pretty vulnerable and probably immediately shatter, which he did after a young cop who says he didn't hear the announcement over the radio ended up shooting the suspect, which in the moment he had me going. Like I thought he was exactly kind of how he was, that he was green and didn't know any better. He looked to me to be visibly sorry for it. But then later we find out he was paid off because of course. Was this, did we care about this sort of resolution at all? This storyline never really sticks out to me. Not that everything's like a case of the week or anything like that, but like I always kind of forget how this goes, or I don't have a ton of investment in it, probably because I don't like the cop. But was this okay for a first episode, like the action of it?
I think so. The most interesting part to this whole storyline is the reveal that Whitney Frost is involved and that she's the one kind of pulling her husband's strings.
Mm-hmm.
I think everything leading up to that is like mediocre, but worth it in the end because you're like, oh, okay. Like, you know, he's shady from the beginning and you think she's just some starlet who's, you know, not really aware of what her husband's doing, and then come to find out, oh no, she knows, and she's fixing the situation.
But didn't you think she was shady as soon as, like, Jarvis started telling her about the movie, and she was like, I'm not interested, and tried to go back to her husband and hear what was going on with him and Peggy?
I just assumed she thought Jarvis was creepy and weird and wanted to get away from him.
I think that scene is interesting, actually, now that you bring it up, because we see a little bit of this Whitney come out. She's not, I would think, and I don't know anything about Hollywood, let alone 1940s Hollywood, but if someone's offering you a movie that has Howard Stark's name on it, I would think that that person would be excited, yeah, and just kind of sign on to whatever. Whereas she's poking holes or like asking questions that Jarvis doesn't necessarily know the answer to, mostly because it's a fake deal. And so I think part of what makes Whitney Frost intimidating is that she's not who you think a Hollywood starlet would be. She's not vapid. She's not completely cheerful and just kind of going along for the ride. She is very much in the driver's seat. And I don't want to say too much more than that, but I think it's fair to say that we will see her again, partially because I saw that Hulu had her as one of like the episode preview photos, because of course Hulu did. So I have two more points that I want to bring up before we wrap up this episode. The first one is that we find out at the very end that Peggy invites Sousa to drinks, and it's cute, but Sousa declines because he has a girlfriend, guys.
Yep.
Sousa's got a girlfriend. And it's a little sad, the scene that she's like looking out the window and seeing him meet up with his girlfriend. Ariana, I know that this is kind of new for you, but are you disappointed that Sousa has a girlfriend and that he
and Peggy are together? This was a roller coaster of emotions, because I think Peggy and Sousa would make a terrible endgame couple, and I will tell you why in just a minute. But in this episode, they had so much chemistry, I really think for the first time. I had never in season one thought that they really had chemistry. But in this season, like in this episode, I was like, am I into this? They're kind of like, I don't know. Maybe it was because they were, I felt the longing. And yeah, so I was sad. I was sad for Peggy. But I also think that they would make a terrible long-term couple for this show. I would not watch that show.
And is it because of their personalities that he doesn't seem strong enough?
Yeah. Like, okay, so I've gotten a lot of heat, we'll say, from people who really hate that I like Jack, which I don't understand why, because he's just a TV character, guys. He's not real. but like, my main point is that TV shows are not real life. And on TV, we don't want to watch what would happen in real life. And in real life, clearly Peggy and Sousa are the best match, because they're both nice people who have similar values. But on TV, that's a terrible couple. I don't want to watch that for 10 seasons, two people who are basically the same. On top of that, I really feel like Sousa has been set up to be kind of like this watered down Steve, and taking away Captain America altogether, but just like Steve as a person who is so moral and good. And Sousa is just like a lesser version of that, in terms of that he's not quite as good and he's not quite as kind, but he is like, he still has those qualities, just not as much as Steve does. And I feel like for us as an audience, for us to feel like at the end, assuming the show were to go 7 seasons, for us to feel at the end that she had a proper emotional arc, we can't feel like she's with, we have to feel like she had a life that she could have never had if Steve was alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that she had to have a, like, that there had to be a fork in the road and she went on a completely different path, not the same path, but not as good. And I also just feel like on TV, the best relationships ask each of the two people to grow by having to reevaluate who they are and what they value. like Logan and Veronica.
That's who my brain went to immediately. I love that you said that.
And I don't think it's necessarily that opposites make the best pairing, because like Logan and Veronica, I would say, are not opposites, but it's just that by being together, they are being forced to grow and being asked to challenge themselves. And it's not that the other person gives them something that they don't have, but that the other person in a way inspires them to find something that they already had in themselves. And I just feel like Sousa and Peggy can't do that for each other, because they're already so similar that they're at a point where they wouldn't grow together. Mm-hmm. They're just already there. They're already both good and as good as they're going to be together. So that's why I feel like they would not work on a TV show, because this is not real life.
Yeah, I think you have a point there. I think that they don't necessarily complement each other, or like have weaknesses that the other one can kind of compensate for, or like you said, kind of grow in different ways. They don't offer each other any of that sort of pushback, at least that we can see here. So I think that's a great point.
Yeah, Sousa is like a ready to move into just newly furnished suburban tract home. It's great, but he's already there at episode one, and you know, Jack is like this crack house and over there. It's looking real ratty right now, but with some TLC and a couple million you throw at it, you know, it'll be this beautiful Victorian in a couple decades.
You heard it here first. Jack is a crack house.
But you know, the custom woodwork on it is great.
Yes. Yeah. The foundation is there.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a fixer-upper. It's a fixer-upper. Oh, boy. Yes. Well, I'm going to be interested in hearing how your thoughts on Sousa and Peggy and Jack and that whole thing go as the season goes along, because I think there will be other things to discuss. For sure. The one last thing that I wanted to bring up here that wasn't in the doc, but I was curious about, because it's something that the fandom slightly takes issue with, and for good reason. But did anyone notice that Angie was missing? Did anyone care that Angie was missing?
I kind of assumed she would be gone, because they didn't really find a place. Like, this is very clearly like a workplace thing, I feel like, or workplace show. There's no reason for her to come to LA. I guess unless she was going to be an actress, then she could have come to LA. Actually, you're right. She should have come to LA. Never mind. I am mad.
That was a roller coaster.
We went on.
I think she brought a lot to the first season, and I do miss her here. But also, I think this episode and the way that all of the characters work together worked so well that adding her in might have felt a little unnatural. Like, she and Peggy have a really great relationship, but so do Peggy and Jarvis. And I think I'm more interested in their dynamic and watching that grow, which leaves less space perhaps for Angie as one.
I think there was a way for, like, I really do like Peggy and Jarvis, but again, I also think that they're better together when they have a weird person to, someone who's very different to play off of, like in this case, Anna, or when Howard is around. And I feel also like Angie could be that person. And they were supposed to be roommates, weren't they? Weren't they?
Yeah, they were living together in Howard Stark's house.
And I just feel like Angie and Jarvis would have had a really fun chemistry, like him having to deal with this New York girl.
Can you imagine Angie? He's so proper. And Anna?
Yeah, they would have been friends. I feel like there's a way to bring her into this world if she's living with them. It would have been so easy. Peggy would have been like, sorry, I'm leaving. I have to go to LA. And she could be like, oh, Hollywood, I'll come with you.
That would be logical. I don't want to say whether or not that happens or whether or not we see Angie again, but I think it's interesting that like we didn't make notice of her at all.
Oh, no, I noticed. It just didn't bother me until now.
Gotcha. Well, then that's what Rewatchable is for. Finding things that bother us only through discussion.
That sounds about right, actually.
That's pretty.
That's our magician summary for the
things bother us. They didn't before.
Yes. Nice and succinct.
Yeah. All right, so let's wrap up this episode with our favorite scenes, favorite lines. I mentioned before, but my favorite scene is Peggy touching down in California and meeting up with Jarvis while looking hella stylish. Because those glasses, that pantsuit, what more do you want? I don't know. Ariana, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was the opening scene, just because it made me so proud. It was just so cool to watch visually. Like when she opens the bank vault and Peggy's standing there with the gun, it's such a like hooray moment. And then on top of that, when like Jack climbs up on the desk and he like tips his hat and you see it's Jack, it's like, yay, the gang's back together. We're going to do this. I liked it a lot. Also, his suit is so great.
Yep. So great. I think you guys mentioned above that they both had green suits and they were killing it.
Yes. And thanks to this podcast, I started following Chad Michael Murray on Instagram, and it is the best decision I've made in a long time.
Really?
So I really recommend it. Yeah.
Okay. I will have to check him out immediately after we finish this. Karen, your favorite scene?
Mine was meeting Anna Jarvis for the first time because she's a spitfire and she's not what you would expect. And her relationship with both Jarvis and Peggy independently, but them also as a trio, is wonderful. And I'm so glad we're to this point.
I love her. She's so great. All right. Favorite lines. My favorite line comes from Jarvis this week, and it's just, "Ready for another adventure, Miss Carter?" That's my terrible attempt at a British accent, but I still enjoy the line. Ariana, your favorite line?
My favorite line was more for the delivery than the actual lines. But the way that Peggy delivers this to Jack, "Jack, she isn't afraid of you." It was such a burn. Like, she said it like it was so obvious, like, what are you going to do with
it? Down easy, like he didn't realize it, and she was like, "Honey,
yeah, honey, listen." I love your note in here, though. Yeah. Next to your favorite line, saying, "Better grab some ice from that lake for that burn." Because yes, 100% yes. All right, Karen, take us home with your favorite line.
Yes, this is after we meet the infamous Bernard Stark, and Jarvis is just done. And he goes, "I couldn't maneuver him into his enclosure. He's the devil in pink." I just cracked up, and Danielle was like, "This is your line, isn't it?" I was like, "Yes, it is."
That damn flamingo. He's so great. All right. Well, we want to know what your favorite scenes, your favorite lines, and just what you feel about this episode. We want to know all of it. So please contact us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can tumble us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And, you know, if you would be so kind, you can rate us 5 stars on iTunes or any stars on iTunes. Any review will help other people find us, help us show up in search results, and just kind of grow our happy family. This week, your incentive for rating us 5 stars on iTunes is Karen will flag you down a flamingo, which that's legit.
I mean, I don't live that far from the zoo, so it's possible, but also I do have a slight phobia of birds, so you're going to have to write us the best review if I'm doing this for you guys.
I forgot that. She is legitimately afraid of birds. Yeah. She will go see stuffed birds. She has no problem with going to a museum to see stuffed birds, but like you're outside and a pigeon lands near her, you better watch out.
If you fly near my head, I'm probably going to run away.
So that's cool. But I mean, give us 5 stars and I will make her do it. Yeah. How about that?
I'll do it for Rewatchable.
There you go. You can also join us in our Facebook group. That's Rewatchables Rewinders. Just search for us on Facebook. Answer our little security question. We just want to make sure that everyone is there who's actually a fan. And come talk to us. Come look at our random pictures. And I don't know, we like GIFs, so maybe just we'll start posting random GIFs. Just whatever. It's a fun group, and we can't wait to see what comes of it.
Alternatively, we will post random GIFs.
You know, I hope you heard the hesitation. I'm trying to be correct. It's fine.
It's not correct.
It's fine.
Not correct.
All right. We just have a couple of pieces of listener feedback. Karen, would you take this tweet, please?
Yes. It says, sorry, your computer's very far away. This is from Cassandra at Palliard. Oh, that helps a lot. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, podcasters. Is anyone reading the Gmail? You only ever quote from tweets on the show. Yes, we do read the Gmail. Mostly Mitch reads the Gmail. However, unfortunately, and we're all very sad about this, Mitch is very, very busy with school right now. So he actually had to take a step back from Rewatchable. And we're going to bring in somebody new for the rest of Agent Carter, which is very exciting. You have her. Have we heard her on Rewatchable before?
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
She's super cool. Her name is Kendra. You guys have probably seen her writing stuff on Hypeable if you pay close attention, but we'll make sure she does a nice little introduction when she gets on here. She's traveling right now, so it might be an episode or two. But she, yeah, so we are sad that Mitch had to take a step back, but...
And no one could ever replace Mitch because Mitch is so wonderful. And we're so sad that
he has tasked us with making sure Mitch's musings lives on, which honestly, it's never going to go away. And hopefully he will be back someday. But for right now, school is more important and we really want him to succeed in that.
Yeah.
But we will find another person to regularly check the Gmail.
Yes.
We all have access to it.
We do. It's just that Mitch was the only kind soul.
He's so good. He is too good for this world.
And check.
Also, really quickly, in honor of Mitch, I would just like to mention Rat Amy.
Yes.
So we do actually have an email. Thank you, Cassandra, for writing into us to ask us about emails, because that prompted us to grab one.
Pulled this up right now, so hopefully I have not read it yet because I'm not good like Mitch. So hopefully it's appropriate. We'll find out, though. So it says, hi, gang. Just thought that I'd share this point. Much as I love most of the Iron Ceiling episode, which was so long ago because we haven't checked the Gmail. When I first watched it, I had seen a documentary on code breaking and learned all about the one-time pad code. As the experts demonstrated, a one-time pad system cannot be broken unless one of the users makes a mistake and reuses a number from a notepad full of code. The code breakers need access to huge amounts of previously compiled coded messages. This actually happened once back in the 40s and allowed U.S. codebreakers access to Soviet messages about the atomic bomb. So there's no way Peggy could have done this off the top of her head. What bugs me about this error is that the scriptwriters could easily have made a name for the code that Peggy broke. But to use the name of a famous code that cannot be broken shows a laziness on their part and even a contempt for the intelligence and viewers. One wonders what else they got wrong about the real world of this era and slid past us. More effort and creativity of this part would have been appreciated. Keep up the great show, Sandy. Sandy, you seem like a really smart person, but I also feel like I need to reiterate that this is a TV show that clearly has almost no, like, historical relevance, right?
I feel like this is true of a lot of television shows where they do kind of, well, for one, they kind of gloss over some of the details. Just because if you're putting a lot of effort into, I mean, granted, this is an actual historical show taking place in the past, so this should be a major thing for them, but sometimes it just can't be. And other times, you kind of need to tweak the facts to work for your show. And I know that's not nice to hear, but when sometimes you have to suspend your disbelief. And I don't disagree with you. This whole thing about the code is true. Like,
that does sound a little lazy.
Yeah, and if it was a really famous code, then obviously they should have taken more time to do that. But in other instances, I think you do have to suspend your disbelief just to, like, kind of enjoy the show. Because they can't always go into detail in a 40-minute episode and make sure that, like, they're getting everything absolutely historically accurate.
I also feel
it's
like
kind of an alternate timeline in a way too, because clearly
Captain America existed.
Yeah. So I think there are ways to fudge it to, like, make it work. But the thing about the code, I think, is super valid. So it's bringing that up.
Yeah. In a world with superheroes, there probably is not quite the same continuity that we have.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like this is how every lawyer, doctor and CIA expert or CSI expert probably feels while watching television.
Oh God, I can't even imagine. I mean, this is how, slight side tangent, but when I watch The Bold Type, this is how I feel with one of the main characters, Kat. She's a social media expert or social media manager. That is what I do in my day job, partially. And it bothers me to no end the way that she actually does her job, because she does not do her job and she should not be like a director of social media. So,
you know what bothers me about The Bold Type is that never mind. I feel like there is, the people who are assistants, like they have their assistant life is nothing like what being an assistant is like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you guys something later when we hang up.
All right. Well, I think we covered quite a lot in this episode. So I think that's enough of us for this episode. But before we go, I do want to get into Ariana's assumptions for season 2, episode 2 A View in the Dark.
A View in the Dark. Well, I hope we get more of 1940s Hollywood. I hope that this sounds morbid, but I hope the next person to die is definitely like an actress. Like I want like some Black Dahlia stuff going on. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Cool. Well, I guess we will just have to watch the next episode to find out. So until next week, when we discuss View in the Dark, I'm Danielle.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Karen.
We'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.